Kintsugi Heroes acknowledges funding and was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Find out more at cbf.org.au.
Welcome to the Kintsugi Heroes podcast, where we share inspirational stories of everyday people going through different challenges and how they overcome them. Please be aware that the story you're about to hear may have moments of deeply felt emotions and personal experiences. If anything you hear has a triggering effect, please reach out to someone who can help keep you safe. If you love this conversation, we'd love you to like and share it with your friends so we can continue to share more inspiration and hope to as many people as possible. Now, listen up for our next hero story.
In this episode, John Milam chats to Dominic Lynch, whose life changed overnight with a stage 4 cancer diagnosis. Dominic faced his situation by taking an engineer's approach, by carefully making plans and focusing on the things he could change. He leaned on the support of family and friends and learned to value his health and relationships over his job. He approached his cancer like a challenge to be met head-on, finding strength in structure and his own fighting spirit. Dominic's story is one of bravery, of facing the tough stuff by acknowledging it, talking about it, and seeking the support needed to keep moving forward. Join John to hear how Dominic reshaped his view on life. Enjoy this one with Dominic Lynch.
So good afternoon, Dom. How are you, mate?
Good afternoon, John. I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Good to be here.
Yeah, so welcome to Kintsugi Podcast and to the listeners. Today we're talking to Dominic Lynch, who is a bloke you'll recognise as every man dude, had all the boxes ticked and life was ticking along nicely with a business and lifestyle and family. And then, of course, the universe decided to intervene and make things a little challenging, and you had a cancer diagnosis. So thank you for joining us and much appreciated. Would you like to tell us a little bit about how you got to where you're sitting in a doctor's office? Just the bit of background, mate.
Yeah, of course, John. It is an important part of the journey and where I'm getting value out of life moving forward. So I think it's an important part just to give a bit of context. So as you said, I thought I was ticking along all right and had the boxes ticked. I kept myself pretty healthy from a fitness perspective and active. I was working in a growing business and things were going well. And I was 51, comfortable, and things were feeling pretty good. Kids were going through school, doing well, coming into their HSC. And, for being in that sort of position in life, we thought we were doing okay. And then around about September 22, I just started feeling a little bit tight in the chest and, during exercise and afterwards. And I thought, I'd just done the old bowel screening. I'd done all the blood tests. I'd done all the things you're meant to do when you're 50 and was pretty confident about my health. But I thought, I know myself, I'll just go and get this checked out. And that led to some heart tests. I was told that the heart was fine. I did the ECG, the stress test, angiogram, and that was all okay. And my GP and I, we started talking and going, well, we could put it down to long COVID. That was suggested because I did push a little bit through the COVID when I had it. But we realized that wasn't the most sensible approach. And so we thought, well, I know when my body's not right. Let's go for a few more scans and let's see where it goes. So between October and December 22, I think I was under a number of different, sandwich presses and scans and all sorts and working things out and machines that go bing and clunk and clang. Yep. And about a week before Christmas, it was confirmed that I had a stage 4 cancer diagnosis.
Wow. Sitting there, did you take the words in? Like you were an athlete, you had a lot of success and a lot of involvement in sport and running around, community-wise, a lot of energy. You worked in a man's industry in construction. What was it like sitting there listening to somebody say you've got a stage 4 cancer?
It's not like anything that I could relate it to, John. Other people get cancer.
Had you ever contemplated being sick?
No. No. Obviously, you think it could happen, of course. I mean, I'm naive to all of that. But to actually be told, yes, you have cancer, and then obviously all of the subsequent conversations that come from that, it's a bit of a voodoo word. Or it was at that point for me. It was like, oh, the C word. I know the world's getting better about talking about cancer. But when you hear it and it applies to yourself, then it's tough. It's kind of one of those words you don't want to hear and you put out of your head. But what made the particular diagnosis extremely tough, and you and I have spoken about this off the pod, is that it wasn't a definitive diagnosis at first. Just due to the existence of a particular protein was identified during the biopsy, the oncologist felt that it was, or believed that it was a papillary renal cell carcinoma, so kidney cancer, on the exterior or in the plumbing of the kidney as opposed to the kidney itself, and that there was no treatment available for it. It's a rare cancer, and that because it was only because of the existence of the protein as opposed to anything visible, that I was unlikely to get on any clinical trials anywhere in the world. We spoke about that over the course of the days. You know, these clinical trials like black and white scenarios. You've got it, can we treat it? If it's grey, it might affect the numbers, and so they're not particularly keen on getting you involved in clinical trials when the results can't be measured truly. And so getting that message just before Christmas, yeah, it was devastating, absolutely devastating. And we just had to put it all out of our minds for a couple of days just to be able to celebrate or enjoy, at least get through Christmas before we faced reality again. And, you know, they were an awful, awful couple of days, right? And so much uncertainty. Yeah, it was horrific. But shortly after Christmas, there was one final test done, PET scan. And essentially it's a heat map of your cancer activity. And the scan was done, the oncologists were looking at the results and they were going, and actually saw what they believed to be a very small primary on the lung. And so the primary is obviously the source of the cancer. And even though it was a stage 4 diagnosis, which means it got out of my body, got out of the primary source and it got into the lymph nodes and the skeleton, your treatment is based on the primary. So chemotherapy was back on the table. More traditional, that they know more about lung cancer, obviously. You know, it is the biggest killer, leading killer of the cancer within Australia, but it's better understood. Yeah, we know that the 5-year survival rate isn't very good at all, but
well, it's going to be better if they at least treating it.
It was, and I, over time, I came to realize at that moment when I was given a fighting chance, when I was given, you know, I was going to get up off the canvas and, you know, I actually had something to fight for, was really, really, really powerful. And I think has set me up in a mindset that I can actually look at this a bit more pragmatically and go, come on, let's give this a good crack and make the best of this situation.
You're sitting there, you're faced with something you'd never contemplated. You know, you're then given zero options. Yeah, what do you think got you through those few days? Because that, you know, like until you actually, you're like, I almost think it's scripted that then someone gave you that second chance almost, right, at that point, even though, you know, it was just a medical process. But mentally, you got a second chance. How did you manage to go through that period? What would happen? What was happening for you?
Oh, what wasn't going through my head, John? I'm very fortunate to have a family close by, also some really close buddies that I can talk to about anything. And I appreciate how fortunate I am to have those people. Immediately, they were right there, not just for me, but also for my wife and my kids. And so I didn't even consider not sharing it beyond my wife and I or the immediate family. We knew we needed the support, and we knew we were going to need the support for a long time. So we reached out quite quickly, and that was really beneficial for me and all of us, actually, in that first week or two. And then obviously they've been on the journey all the way through.
Do you think it was something about you and how you'd cultivated friendships that allowed them to be with you, or was that just a fortunate confluence of points? You know, like, it's not everyone feels comfortable reaching out to support in that space.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a few things that have occurred over a few years, you know, in relation to work or relation to, you know, where I sort of have previously caught myself in a position where I've always been the one that people rely on. I'm physically, as you know, I'm 6'3", I'm 106 kilos, rugby player, etc. I sort of get referred to proverbially, or have been, as the oak tree, and because people can typically rely on me. And a few years ago, that almost got me into trouble, because I was getting myself into a situation where I was trapped in a corporate environment and I didn't see it, and I couldn't reach out because that would be a sign of weakness in myself. And fortunately for me at that time, one of my great mates snapped me out of it and, you know, made me realize what was happening, and I made choices and made a change. That time, and it was a few years ago, it made me realize that the power of those relationships, you know, is huge, and it's not just one way, it's a two-way thing, and there's no sign of weakness, you know, there's not a weakness to open up and share. And so fortunately I got that little bit of an army behind me when, you know, the old proverbial 4x2 hit me across the head in December.
That's a brilliant message, mate, and congratulations for getting there, because, you know, obviously it made an impact. So he, you know, which got you to that place where you said everything changed at that moment when you realized there was a fighting chance.
Yeah.
So what was that emotion that you said, right, I'm going to take this on? Was it simply that you're a, you know, a bit of a hardhead, or was it, you know, something greater than you? What, you know, what was going on for you?
Oh, I don't think many oncologists experience people smiling and in their offices. I remember just going, right, we're on. And in amongst all of this tragedy and denial, I could see that little glimmer and I thought, all right, that's it. I'm chasing that. And that was it. And so, yeah, right from the outset there, building the team around you, both medically and community wise, and realizing the value and the beauty in what is around us, and using that for my own strength. Don't get me wrong, there are really shitty days, but you've got to be grateful for what you've got in the here and now.
Wow. There's something in that. If you can be grateful in the middle of a cancer fight, that's pretty cool.
Maybe that's the perverse thing about the diagnosis. And I know you've asked me the question before, would I have had the same reaction if I didn't have that misdiagnosis? I don't know the answer to that. I just don't know. But that's the way it played out for me. And the competitive juices in me, it appealed to my genetics. And I was like, right, okay.
And that momentum, you know, you just take it. You know, you take the opportunity, the providence, and you go with it. I love that. And I love the way you talk about this process, right? Because, you know, underneath it, we know there's pain. You're going through pain, and there's shame, you know, like that stigma of cancer is challenging. You know, I don't want to tell you something that you already know, but you do talk about it, the process, like it's a project. You know, is that, you know, does that come from your background, do you think?
Probably. I like having a plan. I always have done, you know, an engineer, this is the way it is. You mentioned the box ticking at the very beginning, and I think that's a characteristic you've picked up in me. But for me, there are things I can control and there are things I can't. And building that medical team around me that I've got 100% faith in, and knowing that it works on 12-week cycles and repeat scans, information is king. And I don't even doubt that process now. I understand that process and I can compartmentalize that process. Nothing's going to change the fact that I've got the diagnosis that I have. So get the best people in place to make sure that with the information we've got, we can make the right decisions. Benefit for me then is that I was able to focus on the things I could control, how I turned up for treatment in mind and in body, and how I essentially put a little bit of structure to the chaos in the week or in the day to make sure I kept my brain ticking over, rested when I needed to, ate what I needed to, and cried when I needed to. You know, you've all of those things have got to fit in, and not one overpowering the other. You've got to allow yourself to have enough structure, but also enough flexibility and acceptance that the things do change and things come up that you don't expect. And yeah, so, but at least ticking a few boxes and having that, I was able to remove some of those questions or those doubts or anxieties.
Which seems to be a much stronger place for you, like some form of control, accepting what you can't control, but firmly handling what you can.
Yeah. And I do want to come back that I'm reflecting on this now, 14 months after a diagnosis, and where I am in a headset now. The roller coaster of emotions over that period have been huge, and then significant for a number of people. And you know, there's not part of me to say it was easy or simple or was emotionless. Far, far, far from it. But from a place of reflection, these are the things that stood out to me that helped me and maybe can help other listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that bit, you know, essentially you've scheduled chaos, right? Okay, now it's time to be chaotic and then we'll pick it up again tomorrow. One question, though, and having some lived experience of cancer process myself from family, it can be a long and challenging process and it takes a lot out of you as an individual. You know, some days you just don't feel like being present to the world. Yet you have really made it a thing to communicate, to keep other people in the journey, you know, be updated and connected and shared your wisdom and share your position and your vulnerability as well. Some people don't choose that. Why did you choose to be more open about your process?
I don't know if it was a conscious choice, John. I think a lot of it is in my personality anyway. I mentioned before that I had a trusted group of people that I could open up to, and I think that started that process. You know, I'd sit down and I'd be talking to the guys, the swimming group, and they'd say, "Oh, I'm really sorry to hear about, the cancer that obviously we're with you and with Julie and the kids and what can we do?" The next question from the guys would be, it would be like a practical question. You know, God, let me know when I can come around and mow the lawns or put the bins out or whatever. And then the third question would always be that quiet, how did you find out?
Wow.
And after a couple of times of hearing this question from different people and you're realizing that the question's not about me, it's about them.
Yeah.
And if it can happen to this rugby playing, surf boat rowing, surf life saving, healthy, so-called healthy person, then it could happen to me, right? And that would start a deeper conversation, you know, talking about GPs and the relationship there and being proactive and knowing your body. And over time, that would change. Those conversations would get a little bit deeper and, you know, we'd start talking in the impact on mental health and then the strength in community and connection. And I thought, you know what, I've got something valuable here. There's an experience that I'm living that whether it goes on for 6 months, 12 months, hopefully a lot longer, I can positively influence other people. And it did tend to gravitate towards those guys in my peer group, you know, and sort of 45 to 65 year old stubborn old coots that don't necessarily take a proactive approach to things or share things. And there's nothing wrong with not sharing if you're comfortable with that, or you can share to the group of friends that you've got and you're fortunate to have. But quite quickly felt quite aware of the group in between that want to share but don't have anyone to share to, or don't know how to share,
or even what questions to ask, or you know, it's a difficult place. Men are not good at it.
No, they're not. And I was probably better than most, but I wouldn't have said I was good at it. You know, I was able to open up and communicate, and I had a reason to. I'd been given a diagnosis. I needed to open up. But when you don't have that, or you don't want to even find out if you've got that, you're not going to push that because it's not a comfortable space to venture into. So you'd rather, okay, I'll go to the dentist if my teeth hurt, or I'll go to the doctor if my chest hurts. But only if it gets extreme, that's my experience with guys. Or it doesn't get fixed after 2 or 3 weeks. Well, Hang on a minute.
Well, months even. There are stories out there. It's interesting because men are usually not very attuned to that kind of that level of self-understanding. I would say, you know, you don't hear a lot of stories about someone like yourself, you know, picking it up because it didn't feel right. And then the persistence to follow up. Yeah. So how would you share the importance of that to blokes?
I think the importance is it's clear to see. If you live in denial and you know, and you, each individual, each one of us knows our body better than anybody else, whether it's in the mind, whether it's in the chest, whether it's wherever it is, and we know how we feel now. It's not feeling as good. Yeah, there's something up and you've got to really treasure that. Yeah, your health is your wealth, isn't it? Yeah, look, casting it aside doesn't do anyone or anything any good at all. Position I'm in now compared to where I was 14 months ago is I've now got 14 months of data to assess the next decision or to enable the smart people to make the next decision. If you don't go about trying to find out what's wrong, it's speculation, it's hearsay, it's Dr. Google or whatever. You know, none of that's any good. Actually going, you know what, I'm going to go to the doc. You know, they're there, they're great. We live in a country which has got world-class healthcare and obviously accepting there are challenges financially in some cases. If you can do it, you must do it. And but it comes down to you knowing your own mind and body.
Yeah, trusting that. I think that's a great message, yeah. So interesting, you started, you realized you had learned stuff, that there was something there, that was something important. And of course, you've taken that out further now. So, you know, what was the motivation? Did that feel easy, right? Was something that came, you know, that it just rolled into it? Or is it still a challenge to stand in front of others and share this message? A bit like today, I suppose.
I just felt I had a valuable story to tell. If anyone listened, then great. If anyone found it useful, then great. But I didn't know how to share that. I didn't know who to speak to or how to get any traction on that. So I think the first step that I did was want to understand myself a little bit more. And it started off as a curiosity and has now become something I'm very, very passionate about. And as well as being passionate about it, it fits in really nicely into my treatment program in that by giving, I'm receiving a lot as well. I'm getting that little booster that gives me that little, tick that box of self-care.
The self-care of social connection, of affirmation, of positive regard, you know?
Yeah, so I made it a bit of a, initially it was, I made it a bit of a mission to get out and talk to people like yourself, John, and talk to, you know, various other contacts within the space. And as soon as you start scratching the surface, you realize that everyone is so generous with their time and their contacts.
Mm.
Oh, you should go and talk to so-and-so. You should go and talk to so-and-so. And then just suddenly the ability to go, you know what? I now understand what that message is. And I've got some ideas on how I can now put it out there. Yeah, because at the outset, there were a lot of thoughts going through my head. Do I talk about cancer all the time? Well, everyone's got their challenges. The catalyst for my position where I am mentally now has been the strength I've got from the adversity of a cancer diagnosis. But speaking to various groups, you realize that everyone's story is different. But when it boils down to it, you've got those commonalities of needing, you need those people around you and you need the support and the engagement and the method. Yeah. So I didn't want to dwell on cancer. I didn't want to be defined by being a cancer patient or a cancer battler. You know, for me, it was about what have I learned and how can I use that experience? How did I respond to adversity or a message like that to help others and to help people understand that they're not going through it alone, or they do go and have the balls to go and do their health check, but they find something adverse that they're not alone.
I'm hearing purpose. Is that where we're at now? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, hugely. I feel as though I've got a very different but a much clearer sense of purpose than I did when I was ticking all of my corporate and all those boxes.
Yeah, just being the object of admiration wasn't enough. You've now found purpose as well. Yeah, so
you're a flatterer, John, but it wasn't all perfect. Trust me. But one thing the adversity did for me, but I've always been an extremely giving and supporting person, but it gave me a reason to reflect inward and go, okay, you've given a lot. Now, what's important right here for me right now? And suddenly the most important thing, as I suspect it would be for anyone in my situation, was my children and my wife. And kids were, I mentioned, just about to go into HSC, they're turning 18, wife and I about to celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary. I didn't know if I was going to see any of those things happen. We've ticked them all off now. Right. And moving on to that next step. And then I was very protective of that very insular group there. Then you've got the broader little group around that, which was the friends that support me and that we support, and we're all, these are the extended family and the active groups we're in and around the great community in Northern Beaches. But then I realized that on the outside of that, again, you've got that ability to influence and support others, and importantly, get supported by others. So the feedback from, whilst I'm getting a lot out of doing these pods and doing talks and things like that, I get so much warmth and good feedback from others saying, man, we're with you because, you made me realize this. You made me do this. And I genuinely believe that is helping my course of my treatment and my healing.
It must be good for you. Like, when people say nice things and feel nice things, that energy must be good for you, I reckon.
Yeah, absolutely. But conversely to that is that I have felt pressured to do a couple of things and talks that I've come away from and gone, that was wrong. I should have asked myself why I was doing this. Why this? Why now? Why me? I should have asked myself those questions. And because I came away from those thinking that was hard and I didn't get anything from that. And if I didn't get anything from that, did others get anything from that? And that was a lesson learned. And I was talking to my psychologist about that. And he was saying, well, what's happening in that environment is you're turning a passion and you're moving it into the work quadrant and it's becoming a chore, it's becoming a job. And that's not why you did it. So you need to have the power to say no to that in that situation. Because I don't think it does anyone any good. And so I'm quite conscious there about focusing on where I think my message has most value, but also where I get the best value back for me from a self-care perspective.
Yeah, wow. That's a great thought, the value for everybody depends on the alignment to your purpose, right, maybe.
Yeah, and because, your personal values as well. And if it's not aligned with your personal values, then it's going to influence the way you come across. It's going to influence the messaging you give, and it's too important for that.
Which brings me a personal values question, right? Because you had privilege, you enjoyed a position and lived in a privileged area and all of that stuff, right? Regardless of the hard work and good person you are, but when you have gone through this now, and as you say, it's been 14 months or so on, and then you looked at what was important to you, did that change everything, your attitude to what was important in life?
Yeah, very much so. I can't gloss over the fact that being in the position we were meant that I could have the necessary insurances in place, and my employer were very good. So I'm extremely grateful for that. I accept that. But that's a functional thing. It allowed me to do what I had to do, which was rest, recuperate, stay strong, mind and body, and that was so important. But it also changed very much where that energy should be placed, not just now, but as I look to the future, that materially, it really, comfortable, but I don't want to have strong desires to go and do anything, money wise or anything like that. It's the value you get from the giving. I think that's the thing. I think I've seen a wealth in giving rather than receiving.
It's a beautiful line. Wealth in giving. Beautiful. It's interesting you talk about future. That idea of connecting, you know, like so your family became very real and very, you know, you're very focused on. What has that done to you guys? How is the family now as a part of your world now? Is it changed? Is it different?
Yeah, we're going through it. It's an interesting time. You know, as I mentioned, the kids have finished school and did exceptionally well. They're both got into university, but they're deferring a year. And it's an interesting situation where, you know, I'm going through the trials where I'm going through now, and they're about to head off on a plane to go to the other side of the world. And I couldn't be more supportive of them to do that. They've got their lives to live and their dreams to live out. They could be a bit resistant, and they could be, oh, don't go because I need you here because I might need you to lift this or help mum or whatever it may be. But I'm really excited for them to start living their lives and fulfilling the dreams that they've got. And, you know, hopefully some of the wisdom we rubbed off on them, they can get with them.
That's all you can do. But I love that. So you're really giving the space to them as well. So
yeah, they're wonderful kids, and my wife's absolutely beautiful. So, yeah, they're there with me 110%. I know that, but I also know they've got their own lives to lead, and I'm buying them 110% in that too.
So you mentioned, you know, clearly you're a different guy from where you were a couple of years ago, and going forward in a couple of years, who will you become?
I'd love to have that certainty. You know, let's not talk specific metrics in terms of time frames, John. It's an ongoing journey, but I don't know, because I've seen so much change in me over the last 12 months that is going to happen over the next 12. I don't know what emotions I'm going to have to go through. I don't know, you know, I could get some scan results that'll go, bang, you're away. It's clearing up and it's all sweet. That's going to put me on one trajectory. If it goes the other way, I'm going to be a different person. So I've got to face up to the reality that some of it's out of my control. A lot of it's out of my control. But that aside, I think if I can be someone that people say, I remember what Dom said, that resonates with me, or he helped me there, or I heard that and I acted on it and I'm better off for it. Whether it's one person, whether it's 100, that'll be enough.
When you make that, because you've got a course of chemo going through, and you've got it. When you move forward, what are you worried about? What concerns you? What is there any kind of anxiety, or are you fairly chill about the options, or what?
It's interesting, because this is a bit of some conversations I'm having at the moment. I mentioned with my psychologist at the moment about the frame of mind and enjoying and making the most of the present. Whilst anxiety can be your friend and it can protect you, you can also, if you let it run away with you, it can really cause problems. So an example, it's a silly example, but it gives you an idea of where my head can be at, is that I was told shortly before Christmas that chemotherapy was likely back on the table. I'd been through chemotherapy for 4 months, 5 months in beginning of 2023, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Absolutely drained, lost a lot of weight, lost all my hair, and felt shit ass. And so when I was told I was likely, or there was a good chance I'd be going back on another course, immediately my mind went back, I've got to go through that again. And so over that next cycle of 12 weeks, over that sort of next period when they were monitoring, in my head it was like, oh, no. And it drained me, and I was running myself down going, oh, shit, I've got all that to deal with. When we actually get to the point where the oncologist is saying, we're going to put you on another round of chemotherapy, he said, but it's a different concoction. It's a different cocktail. It won't be as much energy loss. You won't lose your hair. And suddenly it's like, oh, okay, I can handle that. So I'd used a lot of emotional energy in being anxious about something that I couldn't have controlled or was unnecessary. So it's rather a simple analogy, I suppose, or a story, but it highlighted to me about the need to just keep in perspective. And yeah, you can be anxious and use it and begin to sort of look ahead and think about how you might react, but don't let that anxiety define exactly who you are and how you are today. you learn from it but also don't be naive through it either.
No, I like the idea of flexible optimism, right? You know, like we know that life can be good or bad and things are out there that, you know, might be difficult, but I don't want to let anxiety or anxiousness steal my life now, right? My moment. So it's a good way. It's a tough way to learn, but.
It's a tough way to learn and I've got to face up to the reality. Well, I think I have. The odds are stacked against me. You're not kidding myself, but I can't change that. That's the cards I've been dealt. Yeah, a lot of people have been dealt the same cards, right? It's how you react to it and what you can do along the way, to help yourself and look after yourself and look after those around you. And in my case, fulfill a sense of purpose. I feel as though I'd almost be given an opportunity to do something positive that I wouldn't have been doing. I'd have been doing 12-hour days driving to and from Western Sydney and coming home and being grumpy, and I'd have still be doing that, if I didn't have this diagnosis. It's a very different me sitting here now, and I like a lot of it.
Which goes to say, I was thinking, like almost the opposite of the last question. It seems crazy to ask, what in this whole process are you grateful for? Are you pleased about?
There is probably a big part of me that wouldn't mind being doing 12-hour corporate days and being healthy and happy, right? Don't get me wrong. I think that's a given. That's a given. But with a different diagnosis, with no diagnosis, obviously, that would, right now, I'd take that. Okay. But that's not what happened. So, the ability that, or rather the power that the environment around me has given me to actually be able to stand up and share and talk is very gratifying. And I think that it hasn't all come from internally. It's come from people around going, we're behind you on this. We're with you 100% on every aspect of the journey. Sure enough, when I overdo it, my wife will be the first one to rein me back in. All right. I know she's got my best interests at heart. But also when there's an opportunity there, she's right there going, give it a crack because this is important. Having that environment around me and having created that and it being created over a period of time has been, what I look back on now. And I'm very, very fortunate, I think, to be able to say, and I don't know if everyone, I doubt that, if I didn't make it one more day, I'm one of those very lucky people that have genuinely loved and genuinely felt loved. And that gives you enormous self-belief. And, I think that's quite a sort of it's a poignant sort of reflection and go, that's what life's about.
That's the real power in life. Has your view of love changed going through this?
It's certainly become more, I've got a broader definition of love, or rather I've got a broader understanding of the different ways in which love can be shown and received. Obviously through, intimacy with your partner, through love for your kids, and that absolutely blood strong love that's there, to the hugs with your mates, to the laughs, to the crying together because you trust each other to the point you love each other so you can trust each other. There's so many different types. And I've certainly got a better appreciation of that. And you just see beauty in different things. Gratefulness for the sun shining and the birds. And I often do a gratefulness exercise where I just take in what I'm hearing and smelling and seeing and tasting and going, this is a pretty good place. Despite all the other shit going on, there's some things to be thankful for. And if I didn't have that around me, I wouldn't have a cat's hell and chance to survive this diagnosis. I would be going, I need all of this to give me the best shot to keep me around.
Yeah. What would you advise, maybe two or three things that you've just absolutely know now that you'll tell your mates if they ask, what do I need to do to get through something like this?
And we're talking about a situation of adversity. They're obviously not themselves. I think the key thing is acknowledging something's not right. And acknowledging you're feeling a bit different. And so the important thing there is to actually go, right, okay, I know something's, I know I'm feeling different. Why? And so you can reach out to whomever you need to, or speak to your best mate or colleague or whomever it may be, someone you can trust, and actually talk to them about it and open up. And so acknowledgement, certainly, building that community around you. And by community, it's in my case the medical team, but also the emotional and support network that I have was essential. I know in some people it's something that's harder than, it's quite a hard thing to do, but you know, I have seen firsthand how fantastic and how strong and how collaborative the support networks around health, around well-being, around your mental fitness and the like. It's there. It's just you don't know it's there because you don't tend to reach out. But once you do, there's some incredible people. Each and everyone adds a little bit and you become stronger. And I think that's something that I would is reach out and talk. And then the third aspect is not forgetting what is good and what you can control, where you are in. And you know, I mentioned gratefulness before, but I think it goes a bit beyond that. It's realizing what you've learned on that journey to this point in your life. And it defines you to a certain extent, but it doesn't limit you. You know, as I've been talking about in the last hour or so, that being aware and being open and learning from all your experiences, but taking in the new experiences you're feeling, you can get a greater sense of well-being from it. And you can be, you know, in time of adversity, actually feel stronger. You know, I when I first started talking with Ian and yourself about the Kintsugi concept, I loved it because I can feel that, you know, the sum of the broken pieces. And you coming back into real life is, yeah, you can use your experience and use what's around you, but also grow from what you're going through.
It's a wonderful place to end, right? The idea that growing from your experiences, even the ones as tough as the ones you're going through. I'd just like to, you know, thank you, mate, for your honesty, for your vulnerability, and for your purpose, right? Which is help, you know, which is so generous to put it out there when you're going through stuff. I know it's tough.
Yeah, look, it is tough, and yeah, as I mentioned a couple of times, and a lot of smiles. I know that, but I did have to hold myself back a little bit. I could feel a couple of tears coming through then, and it's a tough journey, and yeah, it's one I really, really wish I never would have to go through, of course, and put my loved ones through it as well. And yeah, I couldn't do any of this without their support. But you know, I do value the opportunity I've got, and I really appreciate, you know, being able to talk with you and the broader community about how that message can be of use.
So valuable, mate. You're sharing gold, and it's hard mind, right? It's not easy to get to the middle of a cancer diagnosis. So you have my eternal gratefulness, and also my prayers for a good recovery, mate. So you know, continue to show us the way.
Yeah,
I look forward to you know, talking about answering that question about who do you think you'll be. I look forward to doing that post healing. So
we'll have that conversation in a few years' time, John. Yeah.
Thanks again, Dom. It's been awesome. Cheers, mate.
Great stuff. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Kintsugi Heroes. Please like and share the show to your friends so we can get this out to even more people. If you have a story you'd like to share with us, please reach out using the contact details below. And join us next week for our next Heroes story. Until then, keep being you, and remember that we are all heroes in our own unique way.
Only when it's broken. Only when it's broken. When it hits you in the middle of the night and the truth burns so bright. Only when it's broken. Only when it's broken. Take pride in those cries. It's only for tonight, and then you rise. Only when you're broken. Only when you're broken. Only when you're broken.